Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Is this the real life, or is this just a fictional reality? Hello everyone, and welcome back to the final episode for Season 2 of Fictional Reality. A season where I have talked to a bunch of puzzle, escape room designers, experience designers from around the world now. I've been on at least 3 continents with this podcast, which is super exciting. I want to give a big shout out to COVID-19 for making all that possible. But unfortunately, the quarantine dream for me is almost over. I'm going to have to return back to my old life, working hard to make a living. So, unfortunately, I will have to take a short break from fictional reality, but I will be back as I have decided. 2020 is awesome, but I'm going to do a little bit of time traveling, and I might record some episodes on the road there. So, we shall see. Season 3 might lean a little bit more into talking to people from different times and eras and dimensions and so on. So, we'll see how that goes. This week, my guest is one Steven from Escapages. They were very successful with their Kickstarter on Flatpak, which was a product design catalog. I'm not sure how else to say that. A puzzle book, nonetheless, made to look like a coffee table furniture design catalog. So very cool. And when I spoke to them, their Kickstarter was live. That was full deck. So I do urge you, head over to their website, escapages.co.uk. Stephen has been very generous and offered a discount code. The discount code will be fictional reality, all caps, all one word. Put it in. If you're listening to this now, go to escapages.co.uk. That's .co.uk. Enter in the code fictional reality, all one word, all caps, into your purchase, and you will get a sneaky little discount code. So make the most of that. Stephen was wonderful to talk to, very methodical, very step-by-step puzzle maker. He has been doing this for a long time. Him and his business partner have launched numerous puzzle books already, so they know exactly what they're doing. They've got the discipline down, and it was an absolute pleasure to talk to Stephen. I felt very motivated after to just keep a routine, do it step-by-step, and enjoy, have fun, look at the world around you, look around to see whether you can turn a piece of junk mail that ends up in your letterbox into a puzzle, or a receipt that you find on the ground, or some scrap of paper. A lot of us puzzlers, a lot of us puzzle makers and experienced designers, we are inspired by that awe and that wonder that you get from the seemingly mundane and discovering, actually, there's another layer, a fictional reality beneath the top layer of the reality of the object, and that there could be something more going on there. And there's nothing more exciting than pulling on that thread to unravel this big intricate mystery. And his latest product, the Full Deck, does just that. Well, I won't go into too much detail with it. I'll let Stephen talk about it a bit more in the podcast. I'll get out of here. I'll talk to you a little bit more at the end, but otherwise, here is my episode with Escapages. Enjoy. I will tell you one thing, we did have a bit of an audio technical difficulty glitch, so the first little bit of this interview, I apologize to you, Stephen, you're hearing this for the first time now, unfortunately is lost into the abysmal void of infinite nothingness. So we still got the most of the episode, the first bit was cut off, that's why you will hear not much of an introduction, so thank you. Here, lovely, it's recording, so all right, and we're back into it. For you, the listener, probably was an awesome, it would have been half a second. For us, well, a lot happened, but we won't go into the nitty-gritty of what happened in between that second, but we're back and we're ready to rock and roll. Welcome back,
Stephen, we're all a little bit older now. How have you been this last 5 minutes or so?
Well, it's been a mixture. It's been some highs, some lows, some tears, some laughter. It's been an experience. I'm just drying off now, and we should be able to carry on. Yeah,
we're all a little wiser from it.
I think so.
So I'm really curious about the nitty gritty of this of your design process. So you've set yourself the goal of making a daily puzzle. You've committed to it. You sit down at the computer or the pen and paper. Walk us through where do you begin? What do you do?
Way back before then. So if I talk about Full Deck, because that's the current project. Full Deck came from an idea where I have lots and lots of ideas, and it's always good to sort of try and merge them if you can, because you think one okay idea becomes a much stronger idea if you've got two combined together. You look at the Dyson, it's a vacuum cleaner and an air extractor, but put it together, it's something awesome. Right. So I was looking at cooperative puzzles and puzzle books, and I was looking at my fascination with ephemera, and I'm one of those people who keeps all receipts and keeps all little bits and bobs and those pieces of paper that you might otherwise throw away. I for some reason have got squirreled away in pots and little containers, little bits of paper, little notes to myself or from other people.
Stephen has disappeared into a time vortex.
Hello.
You dropped off there for a second, but I think you're back.
Okay. So I keep all these little pieces of paper, and I thought that there's, what if you just had four pieces of paper, could you build a story around that? And added to this is a growing fascination with old shopping lists in trolleys, because people in the UK tend to leave their shopping lists in their shopping bags or in the trolley sometimes. And I've always thought it was an interesting YouTube channel where you picked up someone's shopping list and then you bought their shopping and had to live off their shopping list for a week. Just one of the ideas. And I thought, well, what if they'd left a message in there? And I glued that with my interest in everyone's innate desire to read other people's diaries. Mm-hmm. And I glued that idea with my fascination with the glimpses of serial killers' diaries that you see, like in the film Seven, you see these diaries that he spent years going, and the Grail diary in Indiana Jones, and you think, oh yeah, but that's, you've just skipped past that, and that's the bit that I actually want to read. I want to read that sort of behind the scenes section. And I thought, what about if we could combine all of those and had a serial killer who was killing people for a specific purpose, and there was a pattern that had to be unwrapped, and there's your puzzle element. And then I came up with Full Deck. So I went through all my boxes and pots and things and listed all the different things I had. So I had a loyalty card for a cafe that I go to. So I thought, right, well, loyalty card's brilliant. You can put a puzzle in there based on the number of beans that have been stamped or whatever. And I, for some reason, I've got a receipt printer. And when I shared with my family, I bought a receipt printer. They said, why did you buy one? You don't need a receipt printer. But I thought there's something nice about having a little receipt to print out and whatever. And train tickets I keep. And I thought, well, there's a little puzzle because there's numbers and patterns on a train ticket. And I thought, wouldn't it be brilliant if there was a playing card hidden in every single piece of this ephemera? So I made a list of all the ephemera that I had. And then to make it harder for myself, I randomly assigned a card to each item. So I didn't go, well, that would lend itself nicely to. I thought, no, to make it a challenge for myself, I will choose a card randomly. So I sat with a deck of cards and shuffled them and then picked them out and assigned them to a piece of ephemera. And then I decided that I would start the campaign. I think it was the 1st of April, because I thought I was in lockdown at the time. I was at home from work, yet still working. And I thought it'd be really nice to have something just ticking along in my head and forcing me to work on the storyline some more which has got another thing that maybe I should share with you because I find it interesting, but no one else has heard about it, and create these daily puzzles. So I would sketch them out in one of my notebooks, and then either use Photoshop or Illustrator or a combination of both to create the images. And sometimes I would print them out and take photographs of them in situ, and some of them I would create in Illustrator and then transfer into a Photoshopped photo or whatever. Then for the campaign, for the Kickstarter campaign, part of the package is you either get the three books, so you get a collection of the evidence, the serial killer's diary and the sleep journal of the detective, or you can buy an evidence bag with these 54 items. We've been successful, so I am going to recreate these 54 items. And so if there's a nightclub flyer, you're going to get a nightclub flyer in the evidence bag, and I'm going to take pictures of these in situ. So for example, I'm using the nightclub flyer because that is found in a car park. So I'm going to get them printed up and get one of the leaflets and take a photograph of it in the car park. So it's absolutely in situ.
Right.
So it's not, I think there's two pictures which have to be photoshopped. One of which is an estate agent board. So when you sell a house in the UK, you have this board that goes outside your house. And I thought it'd be fairly ridiculous to send everyone who'd backed it a giant estate agent board. So they're going to get a postcard of that instead. But by and large, it's going to be, if there's a receipt as the clue, they are getting a receipt. And that has been the hardest concept to sell to people, because the idea is that if you just buy the evidence bag, then you've got these 54 items, you'll clear the table and you'll work out which card goes with which item. And so it's so in my mind, the way I would play it is I would lay out all the cards and go through the items one by one. Well, that's definitely a joker. So I would put that on top of the joker and eliminate them that way. But other people I've talked to would actually like to make the full crime board with pins on a cork board and place them and see if they can link them up. Added to which, each of the items links and contributes to the story. So in the serial killer's diary, for example, he alludes to something and you will find the answer on one of the pieces of ephemera. So you have to sort of sift through to sort that out and be the detective.
That's very cool. And it sounds like your process is very organic. It's something that grows and uses a whole bunch of different things that you're fascinated in until, I guess, the moment comes to sit down and start writing it out. Is that fair that you sort of birthed these ideas?
Yeah, I think that it brings to mind something that I read recently in a book called How Innovation Works, and it was to do with the statistics from the Patent Office. And at the turn of the last century, something like 96% of the patents registered were for inventions. So this is something that was completely new. Whereas now, in the last 5 years, certainly the statistic has increased and increased and increased, so that almost 100% of patents are innovations, which is two inventions together. So a roomer, for example, the you know, the robot that vacuums, that's a robot and a vacuum combined. So the huge majority of patents are now actually merging two existing patents, and I kind of think that that's the way that my mind works. Is I've got an idea for that and I've got an idea for that, let's combine them. So and that's how my brain works. So yesterday, for example, I came up with the idea of a Tinder, but instead of your profile picture, you have the book that you're currently reading, because that immediately you'd go, oh, I love that book, or I hated that book, and you'd have more in common than he looks handsome, she looks pretty. I thought it'd be a really interesting starting point. So that was just, I'm not going to do anything with that. It's just an idea, but that's how my brain works. It's lots of combining different ideas.
How do you find the balance between discipline and following your passion, creative passion? What's the balance there?
Incredibly hard, if I'm honest. I'm a magpie in that, not that I would steal ideas, but I do like the shiny. So I do like coming up with ideas, and in my dream land I would come up with ideas and then put them onto someone else to say, create that or work on that.
Toby, get in here right now. I have another idea I want fulfilled.
Yes. like a horrible Wizard of Oz. Right. Yes. So work on this, please, for me. So I think part of the charm of Escapages for me has been to force my discipline of having an idea, letting it burn long enough to see it through. And apart from Escapages, I've written probably 20 books on education because I work in education when I'm not coming up with puzzles. So I've had that discipline of completing books and work like that and completion of tasks. And this has been another level because I'm training myself to use my design skills, to use my narrative impact and interest in narrative and the strength of that. Because if you don't, my view is that if you don't have a narrative behind a puzzle book or a puzzle story, it might as well be Sudoku. It may as well be, just find a number. Put a story behind it and suddenly there's an impetus to finish and it gives a purpose and it drives the story forward.
Yeah. Everyone I've talked to and all the podcasts I listen to about this stuff, they say the same thing. And anyone who's reviewing things like that, especially involve puzzles or puzzle escape games, it's always narrative that is the thing that helps the thing stand out. And I think there's a very big reason that Sudokus have been sitting in news agencies for, well, Sudokus are reasonably new, but, you know, crosswords have been doing their thing in the background for centuries because they are just something that is a bit trivial and novel. And once you've done them, you've done them. Whereas a narrative is something that really engages you on a bit more of an emotional level. So it seems like it's a must.
I think what's weird is that I really struggle with crosswords, despite loving wordplay, despite enjoying puzzles. And I think it's part of that is that no one checks if you've done the crossword right or not. No, you know, when you're on the train and doing a crossword, no one looks over your shoulder and goes, oh no, you're wrong there. And also there's no penalty if you give up on one. You don't lose out on anything. Whereas if you have a narrative driver, then there's that itch that you've got to scratch. But what happened? What actually, I want to find out more. And I think that having a variety of puzzles allows you also to go through, I've got no idea what's going on with that puzzle. I'll skip to the next page and I can come back to that and be playful about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's super important. And there's that line to walk there between linearity and sort of making parallel experiences, but definitely having to go, oh, look, I just can't get this. I need a win. So I'm going to go on to another puzzle and maybe try and solve that, because that impetus to keep going when you're struggling, that can be really hard. And for me, I've walked away from experiences. I say walk away. I've just closed the book or whatever. From experiences where it's like, there's only this to do and I just can't get it. So instead of doing another something else, I'm just going to stop right now. So looks like full deck allows you to, if you do get stumped, then you can move on to something else and hopefully have a win there or come back to something a little bit later. But the narrative is going to continue to come back to it.
Yeah, I think that above it all, even though you've got the serial killer's diary in your hand, you will have to actually work out who the serial killer is. And there will be enough hints towards it, and obviously there will be an opportunity for people to go, I think the serial killer is this, and then they'll be sworn to secrecy and smuggled off to Bulgaria or somewhere. But there is enough of a driver, and in vice versa, one person was the victim, one person was the killer, but you didn't know the whole way through who was who. So you didn't know if you had the heads version, if you were the victim or the killer, and you never found out until the very end. So get that edge going of, am I the bad guy? Am I the bad guy here?
Are we the baddies? And what was that, vice versa? This was one a prior puzzle book that you had written, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's two people going on a journey to meet up, and on their journey, they meet 46 puzzles each. Okay, so we shoehorned the puzzles a little bit in there. But the narrative is, you don't know if you are going to kill someone or you're the victim of someone, and there's a written narrative alongside each puzzle, like a small paragraph to just keep the impetus going of the journey. And as you reveal each puzzle, each solution rather, you go on the website and you get another keyword that gives a bit more information to the story. Right. And it's something that we really like doing. So lots of puzzles will go, you got the puzzle right. And it's like, oh, okay. So you're not actually, you're opening the biscuit tin, but there's nothing inside. Whereas our logic is to have 46 biscuit tins and you go, oh, there's a bit more information. So Flatpak, for example, has got 120 plus puzzles in it. But each of them reveals more of the backstory, who is trapped, why they're trapped, how you can help them. And we've got a very, we think, clever device whereby you can inform us if you've solved the puzzle book by sending a message in a certain way to a certain person that's let us know that six people have solved it so far out of 1,000. But there's 120 puzzles. And there's that reward of I've solved it, that it's not just I've finished all the puzzles, but I've actually solved the problem and I've worked out what's going on and why someone has been trapped and whatever.
Right. Right. It's making me think of, being in school. And when you get the answer, you want to be like, excuse me, teacher, I have the answer. Yes. Is this
correct? Hello.
You don't just sit there and go, I got it. All right. Well, I guess I'll wait for the bell now. Well, we'll start to wrap this up, Steve. And this has just been awesome. Thank you for sharing your story. You have already touched on some tips and hints there, and this has been a valuable resource, I think, for anyone who is something I've taken away from this conversation immediately is that you go to the puzzle gym, and you know, that is the process of a little bit every day or sitting down and setting yourself a task to write a puzzle a day. You seem to be living proof of the value of that discipline. But in terms of tips and tricks, what would you say to anyone out there who's listening to this podcast thinking, I would love to make a puzzle book myself?
I would go back to having some form or multiple forms of recording ideas down, because you can have an idea as you wake up, and if you don't write it down, then it disappears. It's ephemeral, isn't it? And I've got an unhealthy regard for notebooks and diaries, and what's interesting is I was talking to someone about one idea I had, and then I was looking through an old diary that I had, and I'd written down some ideas already for it, so it refreshed some of that enthusiasm. And I would also pursue something that really engages you, because there'd be nothing worse if you asked me to do a puzzle on, I'm trying to think of something really, really dull, on growing orchids. I don't have enough interest in growing orchids to create a puzzle book about that. There's not enough gnawing away at me to do that. And then also alongside that, we've talked about the importance of narrative. I would really encourage narrative, because there has been a growth in puzzle books in the last year, 2 years, and we'd like to think we've contributed to that as well. But a lot, and this isn't a criticism, just an observation, a lot of them don't have a compelling enough storyline for me to want to find out more. It seems like, oh, there's another collection of QR code on the left, puzzle on the right books. And I want to have a bit more meat with my gravy. And certainly Matt and I, when we're working together, concentrate an awful lot on the narrative beforehand. For Full Deck, I had to create three narrative storylines that I did on musical score and plotted out exactly what was going on. And I looked at the hero's journey and I looked at the different patterns that stories go through, because I've got a big fascination in that, to make sure that there was enough of a narrative back support, because your narrative is your spine. In puzzle making, I firmly believe anyway. And if you've got the narrative spine really, really strong, you've got your mission, then the puzzles are much more comfortable. They've got something to rest on, and also they provide inspiration. You've got your date night puzzle set, and that's your hero's journey straight away, isn't it? Is you've got a prize that you want to win, and there's going to be challenges along the way. So immediately it's got a narrative background rather than here's some puzzles to do together.
Right. Yeah. And I've been going down a similar path during COVID of just really immersing myself in much more of a narrative design focus. And it's tricky. I mean, I think like I've found it is easy to just sit there and create a random puzzle that has no context that is self-sufficient. But it is worth the work of exploring the narrative, even just as the designer, because it's very fun to try and tell a story using a medium that isn't just writing out words on a page or a screenplay, but actually using puzzles to tell a story. Is you get addicted to it.
I think there's two big approaches you can have. You can either challenge yourself. And I think if someone wanted to start out doing puzzles, they could challenge themselves by sitting in a room and looking at the different things. So I'm in my lounge at the moment, and there's a whole load of cards on the table. I was thinking, okay, one's got balloons on with dots and stripes. So could you hide a puzzle with the balloons? And then I look across and there's a cushion which has got lines on it. So is there a puzzle you could hide there? And there's a stack of books. So could you write a message with the first word of each title on the book? So where can you put the puzzles? And the other approach would be to come up with a narrative where there's someone in a fix, they need to do something, and how could they get out, and think about their surroundings and what could lend itself to a puzzle there.
Right. It's reminding me of MacGyver a little bit more.
Yes, absolutely. And it forces you to think outside, it literally forces you to think outside the box. And more than that, it's defined. So if you're setting your puzzle in the 1930s, it reduces straight away down. So you can't use that. You can't use that. What did they use? And it makes you research that area and explore what things were around in the 1930s that you could use as prompts towards puzzles.
Yeah, those creative constraints are fertile soil for sure. Mm-hmm. I have found a hack for myself is to give myself a creative constraint, a real one. The stakes actually have to be there. Like, tell someone, hey, I'm going to give this to you on 2 weeks from now. And those I find is when I can sit down and my brain goes, all right, like buckle in, it's time to get to work. Without them, which, you know, I've been experiencing it in varied ways through COVID. Yeah. You can just float away into this infinite world of choice when you are creating. So
public commitment creates commitment, creates a declaration of fulfillment. So you really need to make sure if you're saying I'm going to release this, then you need to make sure that you are going to do it. You've made a public declaration, and it forces you. So you did a serial one, didn't you? You did a puzzle on a cereal box, and you didn't go, I've made a cereal box puzzle. You started off by saying, I want to make, I'm playing around with, I'm looking at the patterns, and you documented that journey. And that to me is fascinating. But also, by making that public declaration, you really had to commit to it, and you really had to complete it then. And I think it's really encouraging for other puzzle makers, because they can go, I can see the journey, I can see behind the scenes of that and how it's working.
Well, and vice versa. Yeah, I've experienced that watching you, and very much also from Mystery City Games. Ben there, he sort of committed to making a puzzle a day in the theme of this day in history.
Yeah, that's brilliant, isn't it? That's so good.
What a great conceit. I had a very similar conversation with him that as I'm having with you about, okay, I just sit down and I make a puzzle and I figure it out. And this is to anyone out there, the puzzle community is really a great community, and I've found that the people are very approachable, such as yourself, and it is great to see other people creating content, and that is inspiring, and it does make you feel like, oh cool, I can be a part of this, and I have my own little world and story to tell as well that actually contributes to the network and community of people. So yeah, I encourage anyone listening to get out there, show us your stuff.
Absolutely. And also ask for help. Like, the number of people who've started campaigns or launched a puzzle book and haven't called out and said, look, you've got 9 or 10 puzzle books published now. What do you use? What What constraints, what challenges have you got? Like, we're so happy to help, because if you ask more, then the market grows and the interest grows, and we and this is obviously something we care about and are interested in, and so it you know, we've got enough books, we're not worried about competition. In fact, we relish it, because it makes us step up our game as well and go, okay, oh golly, they've done something really good there, we need to consider how we can innovate and use some of those ideas, and that's really clever. Subscription puzzles, that's a clever idea. I wonder if we should do that or not. You know, it forces you to think more critically about your output and also about what input you can give to the community.
And all ships rise.
Absolutely, absolutely.
There's enough people out there who are interested in puzzles, so you're not going to be short of any customers, especially with this global reach we have. And there's enough people out there who have no idea that they love puzzles yet. So they're just waiting to be reached with just the perfect thing. So
convert the puggles.
The puggles. Well, Stephen, thank you so much. I could listen to you talk about your process for hours. It's very inspiring, and I'm going to take that image of the puzzle gym home with me, and I think I'm going to create I'd like to create a bit more of a concrete routine for that, because that sounds like a great idea to commit to a puzzle a day.
It's really healthy. Show your work and do a puzzle a day, because it's really healthy. It's really healthy.
Great. Well, thank you very much for coming on. For anyone who's interested, please check the show notes below. What's the best way to reach you? What's your preference there, Steve?
Carrier pigeon. Do you know what? Just pop by and say hello on any of the channels, or drop us an email. We try and make ourselves as available as possible. And we take feedback. We've had a few people say, I hate your puzzles. And you have to stop yourself and go, okay, why? Tell us what it is about them that you don't like. But more than that, we get lots of people saying, I really like it, could you tell us the answer to this, or could you give us a hint towards, or what have you got planned in the future? And it's so nice to just hear people, and so you don't feel like you're talking into the breach of a cave. So anyway, they're more than welcome.
Excellent. Well, thank you for the last time, Stephen, for coming on to Fictional Reality, and we'll catch you next time.
Cheers. Thank you very much, James. Much appreciated.
And there we have it. Thank you once again to Stephen for coming on board for that episode. It was a great episode, and I will do everything I can to track down that missing recording. The first half of the episode was very much about what Stephen is doing, about his Kickstarter, and a little bit more about his process and his history. So it was a great 20 minutes or so, and I will find it. I should be able to, hopefully. Nonetheless, this podcast is going out, so that might be released as a supplementary material. I just want to thank all of my listeners, anyone who is listening to this right now and has been a listener of the episodes. I appreciate you. I really love that you've taken the time in this day and age. You know, time is the biggest commodity that we have, and if you're giving this podcast some of your attention, then it is really appreciated. I want nothing from you other than to learn and enjoy. So I've said this before, but this podcast will remain ad-free. I do it as a passion project. I'm not a fan of podcasts where the ads are seamlessly integrated into the experience. I don't like wasting people's time by telling them about podcasts that they don't give a flying F about. And I just want to cut to the chase. So nonetheless, I will be taking a short break. But if you want to find out more about me and my process of what we're doing here, then head over to puzzledreality.com. Find me on Instagram at thepuzzledmaker. You'll have to do some searching, but I don't know. I haven't really set this thing up that well. Maybe that'll come along in the future. But yeah, I am working on something called the Time Travel Cafe, the Date Night Game. What else is happening? Mystery Puffs, the cereal, mystery. There's heaps of stuff going on at the moment. But I am a busy little bee, and I will endeavor to come back with a newer, better, more awesome season when I've figured out how to get the scheduling right. All right, thank you once again, and we'll catch you next time.